You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Och välkommen till Seglingspodden. Detta är en podd om svensk elitsegling. Och jag som pratar heter Anna Östling.
Seglingspodden presenteras i samarbete med Helly Hansen, Båtmässan Göteborg, Pilot Pen och Brant Båt.
Anna, hej och välkommen hem från Nya Zeeland.
Ja, tack. Fantastisk resa.
Ja, men vilken prestation.
Ja, alltså innerst inne så skaver den ganska mycket. Jag vet att man får ju liksom tänka till lite här nu när man uttalar sig. Och det är klart att det var, alltså det är inte på något sätt ett dåligt resultat. Men vi blev ju som sagt fyra då på VM och vi hade lite högre målsättning, men det var extremt tajt i toppen. Och efter Run Robins så var vi tre team som låg på samma poäng, topp tre då. Och när jag då analyserar de två enda racen som vi förlorade i Run Robin, så kommer vi ner till att vi hade en knut på spinnakefallet som sabbade ett race. Och sen så tappade vi ett annat race nere vid bottenmärket också. Det var extremt strömt. Så det här med typ ögonmått som brukar funka ganska bra. När man vet att men nu börjar det närma sig, nu börjar det bli bråttom. Det ögonmåttet stämde inte alls. Och det tog ett tag innan du vet, man fattade det exakt när det var så mycket tides. Ja, så det var två ganska snöpliga förluster som kanske i slutändan betydde rätt mycket. För när vi väl gick in i semifinalen så fick vi segla mot Pauline Courtois och Celia Willison som vann då grundomgången fast på samma poäng som oss andra. Hon valde en lokal tjej, Megan Thompson, jätteduktig i båten men kanske inte riktigt lika vass totalt sett, så det är små marginaler.
Du hade inte valt Pauline om du hade liksom fått välja.
Nej, alltså våran semifinal var helt brutal. Jag har nog aldrig varit med om en så tajt omgång av tre race. Vi bytte ledning flera gånger i varje race och det var så svårseglat. Vinden kom från en ganska klassisk riktning där då, utanför klubben i Auckland, men väldigt svårseglat. Och alla var helt slut när vi kom in efteråt för att hjärnorna kokade och besluten var tuffa. Men det var en extremt tajt semifinal. Och vi förlorade faktiskt första racet med, alltså på riktigt 2-3 centimeter, säger målbåten. Så med det facit i hand sådär, så är det lite ångest när man vaknar så här jetlaggad på natten och bara funderar på, skulle vi bara inte lagt jippen där? Eller, ja, du vet, det är små marginaler.
Du, jag kommer ihåg ett avsnitt som vi spelade in på Marstrand med Krull där om knut på fallet.
Ja.
Du kanske ska lyssna på det. Han har lite tips.
Ja, men alltså det är så sjukt för det är så mycket som händer, det var väldigt korta banor, blåste jättemycket, extremt strömt och jag vet just i det här fallet så har Annie städat fallet, som hon gör varje gång helt exemplariskt. Och så när vi närmar oss bottenmärket så behöver Linnea hjälp med en grej med gajen. Och då går Annie dit, tar det och sen hamnar den gajen på det städade fallet. Och då säger Annie till oss efterhand att i hennes hjärna så går det snabbt in, bara det här kan bli problem. Men man hinner inte något mer än att bara, okej, nu ska vi plocka. Så att, ja, det finns några sådana grejer som man bara, om inte om och hej och. Men det är väl därför vi älskar den här sporten och fortsätter och fortsätter och fortsätter. Det är liksom aldrig, det ska inte vara enkelt.
Nej, ja, men det lät som att det var kanske den optimala finalen som nu då blev semifinalen.
Ja, och det var en väldigt sjuk känsla när man kommer in och är så brutalt besviken. För då kan vi addera att vi liksom efter semin då det gick rakt in i den här lilla finalen och fullständigt kapitulerade liksom. Det var inte egentligen ett dåligt race och vi var svinnära vinsten, men vi tog den inte och då blir man liksom fyra. Det är ju rätt tråkigt. Så när vi kommer in på land där efteråt bara helt utpumpade så kommer fransyskorna fram och de är liksom nästan tomma. De har precis vunnit men de ser helt så här apatiska ut och bara, vi är helt darriga, vi fattar inte vad som hände och vi är så ledsna för erans skull. Det var ett väldigt konstigt moment i idrotten liksom, där man känner att vi båda kände nog att det här var toppmatcher.
Fjärden bäst i världen, jag tycker det är imponerande.
Ja, du är snäll.
Jag tycker du var duktig. Ni var extremt duktiga, jag följde lite grann på nätet. Det var bra. Men Auckland är ju någonstans seglingens huvudstad. The home of America's Cup också.
Mm, the city of sails. Ja, fantastiskt. Verkligen en dröm att få komma dit och segla. Och man förstår varför när man är där. För att det är så många segel ute hela tiden. Och att få kliva in i det här klubbhuset då. Där man liksom går upp för trappan och möts av the old mug. Cupbucklan, det är ganska häftigt.
Mm. Men du måste berätta nu då, för ni var ju lite närmare America's Cup än vad man kanske bara ser när man går in i klubbhuset. Berätta.
Ja, vi har ju kontakt med några utav dem som jobbar på Team Emirates New Zealand och tjatade oss in där på ett, vad ska man säga, typ studiebesök var det väl. Men de var supervänliga och tog emot oss. Vi har inte en enda bild där inifrån. Det var liksom top secret allting. Men fick ändå chansen att ta oss in och kliva upp på AC40-båten och få en full genomgång av båten. Och man kunde ställa alla dumma frågor som man har. Inklusive frågan typ, kommer vi kunna segla den här båten? Den ser ut som ett rymdskepp och går fort som tusan.
Vi får börja lite, backa lite nu då. Ja. För de som inte har hängt med, liksom, ja. Vad händer med America's Cup? Vad är status och vad är det för båt du pratar om?
Mm. America's Cup vanns ju senast då av Nya Zeeland och då är det ju de som sätter alla regler. Så då har de bestämt att det här, nästa America's Cup kommer seglas i de här AC75-båtarna som sist, alltså foilande enskrovsbåtar. Men i utvecklingen av de nya AC75-erna, förmodligen för att hålla liksom en någon sån här budget, alltså det är ju ändå en ganska massiv insats som krävs för de här cupteamen, men då har man bestämt att utvecklingen får bara ske på de mindre båtarna. Man får alltså inte ta fram en himla massa stora 75-fotsbåtar och testa och justera. Utan man kommer bara få ta fram en sån båt. Och då betyder det att det vill teamen göra så sent som möjligt. Och hur ska de då lägga upp arbetet i liksom testandet? Jo, då har de fått två val. Eller två möjligheter. Det ena är att alla blivit tvingade att köpa en AC40. Som är en 40-fots liten miniatyr av 75-man. Och sedan så får de också bygga en egen max 12 meter lång båt som de får göra justeringar på. Och de här två båtarna då kan man använda för att träna sig i matchracingen och ta fram den bästa foilsen och det bästa som man tror på då för att sen bygga den stora båten. Och det som också står i protokollet är att alla teamen som är tvingade då att köpa den här AC40 måste sen lämna ifrån sig AC40 till Barcelona-eventet.
Mm.
För att det ska seglas en ungdomstävling och en Women's America's Cup.
Coolt.
Mm.
Och där är vi nu då.
Precis, och då steppar vi tillbaka ombord på den här AC40 inne i basen i Auckland. Och just när vi är där så är de i full gång att de seglar båten, den funkar jättebra, de har liksom lärt sig den, men nu har de börjat modifiera båten. Så att det hänger skynken och liksom grejer på vissa saker som vi inte får se. För att det är liksom Nya Zeelands teamets utvecklingsbåt nu då. Det är inte en One Design AC40 längre.
Men ska det vara det då, när vi pratar om Barcelona och Women's America's Cup, så ska det vara en typ då?
Ja, yeah. Så alla båtar, eller alla teamen har då ansvar för att alltså återställa båtarna. Efter att de har gjort sina tester och gjort sina utvecklingar. Så när vi pekade och frågade lite, vad är den där? Ja, det var top secret. Då förstod vi att hej, den är inte med sen då i One Design-klassen. Om det var någon viss liten skärm. Det var inte så att man fattade vad den skärmen gjorde. Så det var inte så att vi var jättespioner direkt. Men
ja. Ja, men någon annan kanske fattar. Då. Ja. Men det, då kunde man ju då tänka så här, okej, okay, Anna och company, ni är på Team Wings är på studiebesök på America's Cup-basen. Ska ni segla America's Cup?
Vi ska ge allt vi har för att göra detta. Och någonstans här, när jag såg båten var ute och seglade runt oss när vi hade vår förberedelseregatta innan VM. Vi har ett ganska roligt klipp på vårat Insta där vi seglar ett race i det här Nya Zeeländska mästerskapet. Och AC40 seglar runt oss och hälften ombord är liksom i kommunikation om vad vi gör. Kom upp lite mer, några grader, vi tar snart en jipp. Men hälften ombord är fullständig kommunikation om vad AC40-båten gör. Så vi var ju helt uppslukade, det var skithäftigt att se. Och de gjorde sina foiling tacks och foiling jibes. Den går fort. Men då kan man ju få en känsla av att, men gud, det där är ju en maskin som inte riktigt är som den vi satt i där och då, kan man säga. Men samtidigt så kommer jag då tillbaka till att okej, men om de ska ha 12 team på startlinjen som de vill,
12
damteam, varför, vad är det som hindrar oss? Absolut ingenting. Så jag känner bara att det är självklart att göra den här satsningen, och i det skedet som vi är nu där vi är liksom mitt i seglingen och har kunskap och liksom motivation, och vi kommer liksom aldrig förlåta oss själva om vi inte ger det en chans.
Ska vi ge våra lyssnare en chans nu då att få vara med på det här lilla äventyret?
Ja, men absolut. Det finns många delar som vi kommer behöva samarbeta kring här nu då. Dels så kommer vi behöva fler tjejer, vi kommer behöva lära oss foila, vi kommer behöva liksom vänja oss vid höga farter, och en grym grej som Nya Zeeland har skrivit in i det här protokollet är att nästa vinnare kan inte ta bort AC40 från nästa cup, så att det kommer vara liksom en längre horisont än bara Barcelona 2024. Och då tänker jag att vi jobbar på vägen här nu, men sen så är det ju andra yngre förmågor som kommer ta vid. Så att vi kommer behöva lära oss att segla fort. Vi kommer behöva en stor påse med pengar.
Så då säger vi till alla som lyssnar, har du en stor påse pengar, hör av dig. Eller ja, har du bara liksom massa kunskap om hur man bygger ett America's Cup-team?
Precis.
Eller ett stort, det behöver inte vara mycket skulptur. Man kan ju ha erfarenhet från att bygga stora idrottsteam. Så Då hör ni av er.
Mm, det här blir en to be continued, om vi säger så.
Ja, grymt. Mm. Och du träffade ju en person. Nu, vad heter hon?
Ja, men precis. Jag träffade Elise Bivis som jobbar som utvecklare i Emirates Team New Zealand. Som, alltså hon var ju en av de smartaste tjejerna jag har träffat, tror jag. Hon bestämde sig väldigt tidigt för att inte skita i sin akademiska liksom, karriär, men älska seglingen. Så att ganska snabbt efter att hon hade börjat plugga så insåg hon att det finns jobb inom engineering och sånt som har med segling att göra. Så att hon är en nyzeeländsk tjej, hon är 29 år. Hon har jobbat för Emirates Team New Zealand i 8 år. Och hon är på Chase Boat number one på Bermuda, så var hon den som var i följebåten med direktkontakt till seglarna, snappar upp alla deras kommentarer om hur det känns i båten, och sen så är hennes hjärna någon typ av superprocessor som sen får ner allt till data och utvecklar. Så hon är med i designteamet, en superinspirerande tjej. Så henne träffade vi, och inte nog med det så vann hon i somras VM för damer i WASP-klassen. Och hon beskriver lite närmare om sin satsning i det, men framförallt sitt brinn för utvecklingen av ascoola båtar.
Vi lyssnar på henne då.
Det gör vi.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
All right, now I'm in New Zealand. I'm actually at the base of Team Emirates New Zealand America's Cup, and I'm stoked to be here with Elise Bivis. This is such honor for me to talk to you. We've met a few times now during these 2 weeks, and I'm happy to have you on the podcast.
No, I'm happy to join you.
Yeah, you're such a cool person. You are working here, and you've been here for 8 years,
Seven years.
And you're only
28.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah. You're working mostly with the on land, but you are also, you've been in the chase boat. Yeah. Can you just tell us a little bit about your career here at the team?
Yeah, so when I started at Emirates Team New Zealand, it was straight out of university, and I started looking at the aerodynamics of this possibility of having the crew on bikes instead of with conventional grinding pedestals. During that Bermuda campaign, I also did some other aerodynamic work with the hull and the fairings, and then also did other 3D modelling to do with 3D printing, mostly for electrical housings, for buttons on the wheel, Glenn's Xbox controller, bits and pieces like that. And so after we won in Bermuda and came back to Auckland, I began running the simulator and also sailing the simulator with Ray Davies as we worked through all these different ideas of boats, and from very conventional fixed keel displacement monohulls through to concepts like what we ended up with the AC75 and various options in the middle. We found a lot of those options in the middle, like say thinking of things like an Imoca and various other four configurations, they're quite good for reaching and around the world, but not very good for up and down and windward leeward races. So we really ended up with it had to be something fully foiling or not at all. There wasn't really a middle ground. Obviously, with sort of the way that things are going in sailing, what all the younger generations excited about is foiling and high speed. So yeah, ended up with a fully foiling option and moved into writing the class rule. And then as some of the sailors were doing the round the world race and stuff once they came back, getting into running the simulator for them, developing concepts. And then once we finally hit the water with boat one, Tauhei, from then on I was out on a chase boat whenever we're sailing, sort of taking notes, listening to both the comms from on board the yacht, the chat happening on the chase boat, sort of bringing together important points and noting them down for the day.
Were you collecting like information and then trying to analyze how to change the like engineering stuff, or more like a team dynamic? Or
I guess I was sort of pulling together some observations, some numbers, some more qualitative from feelings from on the water, to then send that back out to the wider design team. So maybe something wasn't moving very smoothly and then the hydraulics guys might look into the data and say, why is this not working? And then some guys in the boat shed might pull it apart and go, actually, this bearing's come loose. Or
so you like are that. Listening to the sailors while they are using the boat, and like, are you out there in the chase boat, like taking notes?
Yeah.
Or how do you?
Yeah. So on the chase boat, we've all got comms to the yacht. Only a couple of us are able to speak back. Most are just listening.
Yeah.
And then we have some software that's been developed at Emirates Team New Zealand called the Data Viewer, where we can see all the numbers and graphs. So we've got timelines with squiggles and seeing how stuff's happening over time. That's the same software that runs on the phones for the displays on the yacht. So that's what's running on the AC40s also. But that's just numbers because it's easier for the phones to show. And then, all that. And then a comments thing where you can write stuff which gets a time attributed
I'm
to
so
it.
Impressed how you, because I read a little bit about you with your... You're a sailor as well, you've been doing it a great, like you've been doing a great job in the WASP. You're the world champion in the WASP class. First of all, stop there, and we talk about that world championship. How was that?
Yeah, it was so awesome. I mean, like Garda's. It's just the foiling destination in the world. So to be able to get there and experience it was absolutely incredible. Before I went over, people were saying, what are your expectations? And I really had no clue. I did the WASP Games in Perth in 2019, but there are a lot less European sailors who came down to it. And just there's a whole lot more people have joined the class since, I think.
Yeah, we saw some pictures. They were massive. Yeah. How many were you on the start line?
I think there were 160 boats split in two fleets and I think about 30 females. So that was really good growth from 2019. Yeah. There were two.
Yeah.
And then 2022 were kid 30. So,
And it was a committed campaign from your side because it's quite a far away trip.
Yeah, it was... Definitely a bit of an investment going over.
How did you bring the boat? Did you ship or did you buy?
No, so the beauty of the One Design boats is chartered one over there. So,
yeah, great.
It's
like our class.
Yeah, you don't have to take it with you. I took a few ropes and things, but really the boat's all the
same. So have you been sailing the WASP for like a long time? And
yeah.
Have you learned a lot from the guys here? Or
Definitely earlier days talking to the guys. How do you do a foiling jibe? How do you do a tack? And talking to some of the guys at lunchtime and things.
Yeah.
Actually got Pete Burling out one day on a chase boat.
From amazing.
One day of coaching.
Best coach.
But I guess pretty lucky being able to get that opportunity. And then it was really good because I knew going over to Italy was such a big investment. Then having that event in the future was a really good target in terms of going out in the water, knowing that I guess the biggest thing that could be worked on to help get around the race course faster was consistency in tacking.
Yeah.
I mean, even a good tack, you lose a decent bit, but there can be disastrous tacks.
Yeah.
You really want
yeah.
to keep the wings out of the water. I guess worse still is a capsize. So it was really good having that target in mind to sort of motivate training sessions and give some reason for going out on the water and practicing.
Amazing. So your whole world is about sailing, but you are combining your love to, you know, the science part and your career with sailing. When did you decide to combine those two passions?
Yeah, so towards the end of school, I didn't really know what engineering was. I thought it was about cars, which I'm not very interested in, or bridges. But then I went along to this evening about science degrees for high school girls. And one of them, the speakers, also talked about her friend who was doing engineering, and specifically engineering science. And it sounded quite interesting. And I went home and did some more research. And on their website, there were three bullet points. One said, how do you design a sail for low wind conditions?
Wow.
And I was like, oh, this sounds like the degree. Yeah. I also found a lot of the guys at sailing, girls too, do mechanical engineering, and with the assumption that, you know, a lot of sailors who decide to go down the more technical route would want to work for Emirates Team New Zealand. So I thought by doing engineering science, it was something similar but slightly different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smart. Yeah. So when you had your degree and you, you know, this was your goal to work for Team Emirates New Zealand, how did you go through?
Yeah. So with an engineering degree in New Zealand, you have to do 800 hours of work in industry, which is quite good because then when you finish your degree, you've actually got something useful on your CV. And so I was talking to some families at the yacht club who had connections to sailing businesses. And my dad was also talking to friends through that too. And through a past sailing coach, Rob Salthouse, I ended up getting a job at Pure Design and Engineering, which is just down the road. And they specialize in the composite design of yachts, quite a bit of TP52 work and various things. So I worked with them for 2 summers. And they, in the San Francisco campaign, they'd all been part of Team New Zealand, and 2 of the directors during my second summer there were back working part-time at Team New Zealand. So I had got in touch with them again. I think I might have taken in some cupcakes and had a chat with them and said, you know, can you please talk to Team New Zealand for me? I'd just love to have an opportunity. I don't really mind what I'm doing.
No, but, just get in.
Yeah. And so then I ended up having a couple of sort of chats, interviews with Dan Bernasconi, who's head of a design team, and I managed to secure an internship for 2 months.
Oh, great.
That rolled into a job and has continued on since.
Amazing. I read somewhere that your parents thought that this maybe wasn't an environment for young girls. You know, it's a male dominant world, but they didn't say anything to you.
Yeah, so I guess my parents have always been supportive, and so I found out more recently that I said at some stage, you know, I want to work for Team New Zealand, and they apparently had a little chat later and were like, you know, the people that they know with any sort of connection, they're all a lot older, and you know that. And I thought the same too, like maybe at the stage I am now, maybe I'd have experience elsewhere and be able to come in. So yeah, but got straight in. And I think the culture's probably changed a bit. If you went back 10, 15 years, I think it was a much older sort of team, whereas we've got a couple of, you know, new grads. We've got Max, who did the youth program, and he's doing structural engineering. We've got a graduate software guy. We've got Tanya Pert. She's just finishing up her PhD, has submitted it, but not finished it yet. And actually today we've just got 2 interns have both started. So there's definitely...
And you're not the only girl?
No. So there's 3 girls under 30. So
that's
when
great.
People talk boys club. I think when you look at those 10, 20, 30 years ago, not many girls studied engineering, so it's not surprising there's not many 40, 50-year-old women working in design teams for America's Cup, whereas once you look at that 30 and under range, you know, it's a lot more even.
And you've done a great job, because we were talking to Russell Green and he was like, no, she won't be on the women's book because we need her online. She's too good. But what are your goals with your sailing?
I guess when I got to the end of school, I realized that I had more of a competitive mindset academically than sporting. I'd also seen quite a few people just older than me sort of trying to do the Olympic sailing, trying to do university, failing at both, and then they're 5 years on and haven't really got anywhere with either. So I really threw myself into the academic side. But then I came through my degree and started working here and was really keen to get back into sailing. And that's what I tell a lot of, you know, younger sailors is being a professional sailor is not the only way to stay involved in sailing.
No.
There's a huge wealth of jobs with the logistics, the management, the drumming up sponsorship, the media, you know, written and photos. There's so many opportunities out there where you can work in these sailing environments. You can still go sailing by yourself for fun, whether that's in dinghies, keelboats,
racing, cruising. And we can maybe see, like, you should never say never, because maybe in 10 years' time you will be driving a Women's America Cup as well. You never know, right?
Yeah.
If you're in the environment.
Like, looking back 5 years, there's so many more opportunities out there. Over in Ghana, I met Hattie Rogers, and she's just finishing her degree. And with, SailGP, Women's America's Cup, just all these other circuits, the 69Fs, the ETFs, there's a lot more opportunities out there, and women in sailing is getting a lot of attention, including with money.
Yeah, that's amazing. We love that new road and the pathway and the decisions that Team New Zealand has taken to actually build this new AC40.
Yep.
So, and I know that you're involved in that one too. We actually went to see the boat the other day, and it's a massive, cool sailing machine. Can you tell us a little bit about the AC40?
Yeah, so the AC40 is really like a scaled down AC75, except all the functions are done off a battery. So there's no humans providing power. So I guess there's maybe been more opportunities for bigger, stronger people in general. So not just women, but also smaller guys, they might be limited in where they could get with sailing. So the AC40 really takes anything physical out of it, because you are sitting in a seat. I mean, you could have Paralympic type sailers. Yeah. They could.
We were talking to Blair at the boat, and he was like, we actually struggle to keep,
not get pins and needles.
Yeah, so between races, we go up and do push-ups on the boat. It's a different kind of sailing.
So it's quite different in that regard. And also, you're not holding ropes. So the jib tracks a rope with a self tacker, but everything is hydraulically powered. So you're not feeling a load in a sheet and trimming to that. Instead, you've got phones with displays with loads that say what load each of these functions
have. But you're still managing the jib cars, but you do it by buttons?
Yeah. So there's two toggles. One does the sheet and one does the track.
Yeah.
And then there's another panel where you choose if you're acting on the mainsail or on the jib.
Okay.
So on each.
So we will have one girl or
person.
youth guy or whatever trimming, and one is on the helm.
Yeah.
And the one is the one on the helm will also do
the foils.
The foils. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So the helm has some buttons, and they can move, just adjust the cant slightly up or down, or they can press the button which shoots it all the way up or shoots it all the way down.
Mm.
And the helm also chooses how high you're flying. So there's some up or down buttons, so how high the boat is above the water, and also trim buttons. So for like a moth or a wasp, where you twist the tiller extension to change your trim, you'd be pressing these buttons to say, actually, I want to go, I'm currently sailing at minus one trim, I want to go to a bit more bow down, I'll click that a couple of times.
Mm. And we found out also that you have a few like emergency help out systems, because we are talking about super fast boats here, and again talking about women sailing, we don't maybe have all that experience yet. So how will it work, for women now, we've been maybe racing in the M32s or the Wasps, and we're up in 20 knots.
Yeah.
And we feel that's fast. So what will the experience be when you step on to the AC40, and how can the boat help us to actually manage?
So it might be to double the speed of what you've gone on a yacht before. So that's part of why it's chosen to have all the flight done by the autopilot. So you're just setting the height and the trim, and that's looked after for you. Because I guess with manual control, where it really could get dangerous is if you fly the boat massively out of the water and big crash down. So having the autopilot there just keeps that quite a bit safer. So the range of heights and trims that you can set, they're set to be sensible. So our guys might like to push it a bit more, but really it's a one design class. So all we're saying, let's keep it a bit safer and not allow anything too extreme. And then if something in sea state or some weird sail trim or something does upset things quite badly and the rudder's getting close to coming out of the water, the autopilot will change the trim it's targeting to really put more back in the water. Because, if the rudder comes out, you lose steering, big nosedive.
And you said something about penalties if you're pushing limits too hard. Can you describe that? Or was it maybe
Russell said
rules.
I think if you were setting your trim target so a super bow down all the time and it kept going, nope, your rudder's close to coming up, send you down, then going through that cycle of pushing that all the time.
Oh, maybe it was that he meant that you will be having a penalty with the boat taking you slow maybe. Again. Yeah, we have to figure out.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we go back to how we should actually manage these super fast boats if we don't have the knowledge. I know that you have quite a good setup with the
simulator.
Yeah.
So in terms of coming up with the AC75 in the first place, that was all with our simulator where we can put in different foils, we can make rigs bigger or smaller. And then, so we have a model of an AC40 and our guys sailed on it before going sailing the real world. So the details are still being figured out. AC40 youth and women's teams aren't allowed to train together before the 30th of June next year. So we've got a bit of time to iron out the details, but options range from being able to buy sort of a gaming wheel from our IT shop nearby and plug it in your laptop and go like that, or through to doing a centralized setup in Barcelona that all the youth and women teams can come to, where there's the real buttons like on the boat, potentially even cockpit side, so in the right seat, so it feels like you're on the boat, to just try and, you won't have that huge apparent wind speed blowing over you, but that way, hopefully you can get used to which button's which, so you're not having to put your head down and read and make sure you're pressing the right one.
And you can
see
that the boat is going fast forward on the screen and maybe have other boats. So you need to, understand when to turn.
Yeah, well, then the simulator, we've got capability for match racing.
Oh, that's amazing.
That might be able to go further to have even more because...
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the races for the women's and the Youth America's Cups are fleet races.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of boats moving around at high speed. So you need your head up to see where everyone else is.
Yeah, we're so excited. It will be an amazing event. And we can't, we're so looking forward to this in a few years.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing. Let's say you would be in a position to set up a women's team and, with the goal to reach the event.
Yeah.
What would you do?
Obviously there is a cost to entry and you're going to need to get sponsorship on board with that. And I guess what you'd really want to do is have access to an AC40. So if you're from a country with a cup team, you'd want to foster relations with that cup team and hopefully getting some time on the boat and learn from what the cup sailors are doing. But ultimately that's going to be dictated by what the cup team's up to and what else the boat's being used for. Whereas I think if you're from a country which doesn't have a cup team, it'd be worth talking to sailors, whether it's a youth team from your country or youth and women's team from other countries, and together going out to look for some investors to try and buy an AC40, because if you could split that cost between four teams, it's not like any one team's going to use it all day every day anyway.
Yeah,
it'd be if you could get a group of four teams or so together
and develop it together, and
then the investors have that AC40 as an asset. They're not just paying an entry fee, they actually have this AC40, which hopefully there's this good future of. And with the boat set up how it is, with the two trimmers, two hounds, if those investors are of a sailing mindset themselves and really want to experience it themselves, once the women's and youth team get up to speed themselves, you can actually put one of them on board and they can experience it for themselves.
Yeah, that's
while you've got the other three who know what's going on.
Yeah.
And particularly the helm seat, the trimmer's actually the harder position to jump on. Whereas if, you know, these investors, they can jump on and spend some 10 or 20 minutes in that helm seat. You've got the other helm who's got access to the wheel, so they can always grab it if anything gets shaky. Well, yeah, a pretty cool thing to sell back to them.
Yeah. So trying, of course, to manage the budget question in this campaign, but it's the same for, you know, the cups, like in all previous years as well. What type of sailing would you do if, like in before you, you step onto the AC?
I think I'll probably be trying to get on yacht sitter as fast as possible, just to get some feeling for that speed, making decisions quickly, and just the foiling boats to get used to that sort of three dimensions of movement rather than two.
Yeah. Elise, I couldn't thank you more. This has been the nicest 25 minutes ever. We are so happy to see you here and shine with your degree in science and combine it with your passion in sailing. And we wish you the best of luck, and hopefully we'll see you around driving or trimming the AC40 in the future.
Thank you. All the best for your future sailing.
Thanks, Elise.
Ja, shit, coolt. Man blir, får nästan gåshud när man liksom hör den här extrema entusiasmen som hon sitter i.
Ja, alltså väldigt cool tjej, och hur hon är så himla dedicated på att hon vill jobba inom seglingen, och att det finns många jobb som inte bara liksom har med att vara seglare och liksom den biten. Ja. En boost för alla som gillar den akademiska världen också.
Ascoolt. Tack för nu då.
Ja, tack för att ni har lyssnat, och vi hörs igen om 2 veckor.
En poddproduktion av Fredag.